everybody, and welcome to See You on the Trail podcast, the only podcast with off-road and off-road racing information, interviews, stats, and everything. So, guys, welcome. This is our third podcast. We're doing really, really well. Just wanted to let you know, we doubled our views from our first podcast to our second. So we're really intrigued by this. We're really excited about it. We're going to have a good time. Guys, check out our social media. I want to let you know that. Make sure you check out our Facebook and our YouTube, our Twitter and our Instagram. We do post the podcast there, but there's so much more on those sites that let you know a lot of the other stuff that that goes on throughout the week. And details about last podcast week. Yeah, like I said, we doubled it. We had an interview with Casey Shearer, the UTV racer. From King of the Hammers. He talked about King of the Hammers. He talked about his history in the racing industry. He actually started out doing kart racing. He shifter karts and gas karts and a couple of other things. It's kind of unique. You ought to sit back and listen to it. He's out of Northern California. I met him about a year ago and just kind of clicked, man. He calls me the drunk cousin, which I'm not really sure where that comes from. Maybe you guys know. Well, maybe his cousin drinks Keystone, but who knows? But Casey Shearer was a good interview, and we're excited for this next interview we have going on today. I want to let you know where you can listen to our podcast. We are based off of Anchor Podcast, A-N-C-H-O-R, Anchor Podcast. Go look us up. Just spell out See You on the Trail. Just don't put any spaces in it. Just spell it out. And that's how you can find us on everything. You can find us on Spotify, Google, Apple, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, YouTube, and as well Facebook. Please go to all those platforms and subscribe to us. Like it. Just give it a thumbs up or whatever it is on each of the platforms. I haven't been to all the platforms yet to see how you do that, but with Anchor, they actually they basically sublet us out and put us on different places where we're broadcast. So it's doing really, really well. I'm enjoying this podcast. I'm having a great time doing it. I know we said we were going to only do them every 2 weeks, but we seem to be getting a really good response. You guys are enjoying it, and I'm enjoying it too. So currently, as long as I can keep the interviews coming along, we're going to stick with once a week. Mondays at 2 p.m. I'll have a new podcast out with a new interview every single week. If we keep seeing a drive for it and a want for it, then we'll continue to do it. We might back off here and there whenever we get into the really hard race season. Maybe I might not be able to get a couple of them up here and there, but I'll do my damnedest to get it taken care of. Let's go ahead and let's talk about the Mint. 400 qualifying. As we're recording this, I've only seen the qualifying. Tomorrow will be the actual Mint 400. Let me ask you this question. Have you ever been to the Mint 400? That is one thing that is on my bucket list, and I have not made it to yet. I really want to go walk down Fremont Street and see all those race cars on either side and watch them drive down Las Vegas Boulevard, down the Strip. That would be so awesome. Have you guys seen it? What did you think about it? Tell us your experience with it. If you have YouTube videos or Facebook videos, link them to our page, man. We'd love to see them. Bryce Menzies, sucked in pole, man. He did a good job. It's good to see him back in action. After his bad wreck a couple years ago, he did a bad number on his back and on his car also. And then he had another accident. I believe it wasn't as serious, but he did have another accident. It's good to see him back. And how about those videos on the wrecks? Holy crap. Potts was one of them. And then there was a couple of other ones. One guy did a whole front flip and then just kept going, man. And on my Facebook post, somebody said, Monster Jam ain't got nothing on this guy. I thought it was really, really cool that guy kept going. And I believe from what I've heard, everybody's safe. Everybody's fine. Nobody got hurt. It did look like one of those videos. It looked like somebody fell out, but no, that was just a piece of the vehicle. And then the spare tire fell off as well. Did you guys see the one where the axle completely fell off the car? I hate to laugh about this because I know it's a lot of money to replace this stuff and fix it, but those racers and drivers and owners, they all know what they're getting into in the first place. And so they know that there's a chance that they're going to wreck. And the only thing you can do after something like that is to make sure everybody is safe. Everybody's okay. If they aren't, get them to the right medical people that need to take care of them. And then get them healed up to where they can come back and race again. And then afterwards, you guys can kind of laugh about it. Everybody can laugh about it, but know that everybody was safe. We don't like to hear stories when people get hurt. Cars can be replaced. So that's the way I think about it. I know I've hurt some feelings here and there whenever I laugh when somebody rolls, but it's just my nature, knowing that once I find out everybody's okay, then everything's fine after that and cars can be replaced. You can go back, you can have the history of saying you did that and you got your car back and you rebuilt it. That's the best thing that I love is watching when somebody totals something and they bring it back in a short amount of time. And especially with Ultra 4, they do it with basically usually a bare bones budget because they weren't expecting to spend all that kind of money to get it back, but they're back at the next race. It's unbelievable. So anyway, what'd you guys think about those wrecks? If you didn't see them, go on my Facebook channel. I've shared them all. Fishdistics, I believe is what it is. They have a lot of the footage from that spot right there in the qualifying that kept bucking people up and screwing them up and making them roll. They have a lot of that footage. So go check it out. Fishgistics is one of them. Next week we'll talk about the Mint 400 finals because that happens tomorrow where I'm recording this. So we'll talk about that then. Maybe I can get some of the Mint 400 guys on. I did laugh. If you guys have not followed BJ Baldwin on Instagram and watched his stories, that's somebody that I do get a kick out of listening to and watching. A lot of the time he's full of shit and he's really funny. And, he has, a sort of, sense of humor that you don't get until you've watched him for a few weeks and then you start to get it and you understand it. And then, he's got a lot of family stuff on there, but he popped on the stories and said, he got first and that's why he was at the casino gambling. Da, da, da. The next one was, we thought we got 12 or 13th. And then the next one after that was the actual qualifying times. And he actually qualified 18th, which is still respectable. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's just going to be eating dust for a little bit. And hopefully he can get out in front and not tear up the car. I know he's one of those checkers or wreckers guys. If he can't win, he wants to basically annihilate the car. And that's the mindset of a lot of the off-road racers out there. It's not just to finish anymore. It's to win because they've been racing for so long. They've been fighting for that win for so long. They've got to have it. So anyway, next up, who we have on the show today? We've got a guy that I've known since, I believe, 2013. I met him back at S'more. He did a secret build for the owner of S'more. It's called, if you've ever been to S'more, you've seen the vehicle. It's bright orange. It's got an awesome cage on it. It's stretched on, I want to say 49s, 40, 46s maybe. I think it's 46s. It's a great rock crawler. It's called Juggy. The first generation of Juggy after he bought it, I actually got to drive it for a day and take it wheeling out at S'more. And it was a good buggy then. But what he did to it, I mean, he did a complete and further overhaul on it. And he'll tell you about it in the interview. It was just, it was awesome. His name is Chad McDonald from Green Country Off-Road. They used to be based in Vinita, Oklahoma, but they most recently moved as of January 1st. They moved to Claremore, Oklahoma. And they've got some other plans in the works to have some storefronts. But now all they have right now is just a shop area that Rocky, his shop foreman, works at and does all the fabrication. Chad gets back in there. As long as he can get away from the phone, that guy's back there fabbing up and doing the bending and the welding and the designing as well. I go there three, four times, sometimes a month. and hang out with them and see what they're building. I've seen some of their really cool builds out there. And we're going to sit down and talk to him. So I'm going to let you guys listen to that interview, and then I'll be back with you in about 20, 30 minutes, man. Enjoy, and we'll see you in a bit. Guys, we're here with Chad McDonald, the owner of Green Country Off-Road. Was located in Vinita, Oklahoma, now moved to Claremore. Chad, tell us what you got going on, man.
We've got actually still a lot of stuff going on. Like I said, that's true. We moved from Vinita here January 1 and got down here to Claremore and kind of got going there just about the second week in February. It took us about 6 weeks to get moving. But we've still got several things going on. And the bad part is we've downsized shops for right now into a smaller facility.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I do know. I've been to your shop many times, and man, you had that place packed to the gills with everything from farm equipment to off-road race cars. I'm surprised you were able to downsize that well.
Well, we were able to, with this move right here, it got us away from the agriculture in a sense. So we don't have the farmers coming in. We can focus more on just the off-road side of stuff. So that's going to be a benefit to us, you know, as far as time-wise goes.
That's cool. Now, we met back in, I believe it was, I want to say 2013. We met at S'more, Southern Missouri Off-Road Ranch, at Brandon Powell's place. And you were releasing one of your premier builds. Let's go back in the history of Green Country Off-Road. How long you guys been in business? And tell us about some of your premium, like your premier off-road vehicles that you've built and that you showcase out all the time.
Well, as far as being in business, I opened the doors up literally back in 2000, so it's rolling on 19 years now. As far as getting steady in the off-road business, that was around 2005 and 2006 is when we kind of started focusing on the off-road business versus the agriculture business, what I originally started at doing. With that being said, we had some local people, some local success around town, you know, the local Jeepers, we weren't just 20 miles or 20 minutes, I'm sorry, from Disney, you know, so there's several crawlers in the area, and that's basically what we focused on was the rock crawlers in general. There was no rock racing or anything like that at the time. There might have been even some the Dirt Riot, but I didn't know too much about it at the time. You know, we were just strictly the low and slow crawl. Rock crawling.
Right. Yeah. And when I met you, what was it? Rocktober is what you did there at Disney when I met you?
No, it was Howie Palooza. Yeah. No, you was there for Howie Palooza, wasn't you?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, I've been to Howie Palooza.
That's when we debuted the Juggy to Brandon was Howie Palooza.
That's right. And you know what's funny is, you know, I have a pretty big history with Brandon. I've been going there since they basically opened the park. And I actually drove the original Juggy. And then he went into some sort of a morph there for a little bit, and then you took it, and I guess it was a surprise to Brandon for what you were doing with it, right? Tell us a little bit of story about that.
Basically, yeah, it really was. He wanted us to overhaul the suspension on it to basically update what he originally had. It was kind of an OD green rig that he had there, and he just wanted to update the suspension on it. And when we got it back to the shop and got to looking at things, Brandon's a great salesman. You know, he's got a great pitch behind him and a little charisma there behind him. And I was afraid that if he just told everybody, yeah, that Green Country built that rig out there, I didn't want our name stamped across that green buggy that he already had. It was an older rig. It was outdated and it was heavy. And I didn't want everybody thinking that we had built that or thinking that he was lying to him or any of the other stuff, just because I know how kind of Brandon is as far as, yeah, they built that without saying that they built the suspension. He'd say they built that. So when we got a hold of it, yeah, we went to looking at it. That we better lighten it up a little bit. And we just took off on it. And, yeah, we changed out everything from the frame. The only thing originally left of that, the original Juggy, if I remember correctly, is just the hood and the grill.
Really? That's awesome. Yeah, because I took the video of it, you actually debuting it to him. We were trying to work it out to where you showed up whenever I was doing a full interview, like commercial for him. And we tried to do that, and it didn't work out the way we wanted it to. But anyway, it was funny. that's how we ended up meeting. And I've been, you and me have been friends ever since, man.
Yeah, we have. We've done a lot together, been a lot of places together.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you've taken me to Big Meat Run a couple times, and then you've also brought me along to SEMA, which I think I remember most of that.
First one or the second one.
But anyway, and then now you started getting into more, what are some of your premier buggies that you're proud of that have come out of Green Country Off-Road?
Well, some of the ones that really stand out to everybody that got a lot of attention on the internet and that was able to be seen a lot, of course, was the Juggy Rig. You know, a lot of people actually thought I owned it because I drug it with me everywhere, and it was really just more of advertising for us and S'mores at the time. You know, we were trying to get both names going and go and out there, and it seemed like I always had that orange buggy behind me. And then we had built a white one there for a local guy there in Bonita, and he traveled with us, and he brought that Jeep along. So we always had two or three builds with us at all times that people could see, and we would wheel them, and people could see them work, and they liked the looks of them, you know. And the premier ones, man, it's hard to say, Alan.
Yeah, you had Little Red. Yes, that was one of your good builds. I wouldn't say it was a bottom dollar build, but it was a feasible build for a lot of people. I mean, we're talking Juggy's probably a $40,000 to $50,000 build, where Little Red was a $12,000 to $15,000 build. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. You're about correct on that.
Yeah, because I borrowed it from old Grover, rest in peace. I borrowed it from him a few years ago, and got to drive it around. And I'll tell you what, it went up waterfall at Disney on the right-hand side. I could not make it on the left-hand side, but the right-hand side, it popped right up every single time. That thing, it just works on the rocks. And that's the only, to tell you the truth, that's the only actual Green Country Off-Road built vehicle, fully built vehicle that I've ever driven. And man, it was just like crawling over anything. It was going to get groceries. It worked well.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Now you've got the other one. Let me just bring up some of the other ones. The green and purple one. What was that called?
That's the Goblin.
That's the Goblin. Who owns it now?
A guy by the name of Kevin Hubbard, and he lives down in the Texas area.
Okay. Yeah. Now that was a really cool build. Tell us more about that one.
That one was actually built for a local guy there in the Broken Arrow area. Actually, a veteran. And he had some friends want to help him build it and this and that. And when it came down to it, they kind of, I'm not going to say left him high and dry by no means, but it was just a time for them to work on it for him, you know, and he was wanting it now. We made the deal with him to go ahead and finish it. And when we brought it up there, it was a leaf spring rig, and that's what he was focused on. And we ended up basically talking him into four-linking it out. And it had a AMC 4.1 in it, and we ended up talking him into an LS motor. You know, just trying to change some things up on him, stuff that would make it more feasible, more practical if he was out and about for, you know, parts, maintenance, whatever. And anyway, it kind of took off from there, and he helped us on it quite a bit because he was back from deployment, so he was up there 3 days a week at least until the last 60 days, and we stopped him from coming up there just so we could get it painted and assembled and kind of give him a surprise when it was all said and done.
Gotcha. Very cool. And then I think the next one on the build would be the Orange Hammer was the next one that came out, right?
Well, we had a Rock Bouncer in there. Between that, Livingston's Rock Bouncer there out of the Bonita area. That was, you know, the full blown bouncer rig that I never really wanted to build a bouncer, but we got drawn into it, and we'd probably build another one if somebody, you know, wanted us to. But yeah, as far as Jeep goes, crawler goes, the next one out the door would have been the Hammer.
Yeah, now Jory owns the Hammer. I don't think that boy will ever let go of it. I'm surprised I even got. Well, you know, I take that back. What I said before, that's not the only rig I've driven. I've driven the Orange Hammer, and I actually drove it out of the Louisville the Expo. I was breaking the law whenever I did it.
Don't think anything incriminating.
But tell us about the Orange Hammer, Jory's rig, and. Well, some of the details that you guys put into it.
Well, it basically, he'd give us a call. I didn't know him from anybody, of course, kind of like a lot of our customers that call us, and said a friend of ours referred him to us. And so he gave us a call. He came down. He looked over some of our stuff, and he said, yeah. And he brought us a basket case. Basically, he brought us a frame and a tub and then a motor over here, some axles over there, just basically a basket case that he bought from somebody that started the project and in turn couldn't finish it. So he brought it to us, and we had it for almost, I'd say, 2 years on that particular deal, because he said that he's not in any hurry for it. He wasn't really sure what he was getting into and didn't know how deep he wanted to get into it. And what it really boiled down to on his was he was looking for a show quality rig, in a sense. He likes to rock crawl, but he does not like to beat on his stuff real hard. He just likes to go out and be around people and basically enjoy the scenery. Now, he will crawl, but he just won't beat it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he just wanted something nice. And like I said, so it took a while getting that information out of him. And end result, he got him, I believe it's about an 80 model CJ7. With an LS motor in it, and a 4L, I believe it's a 4L80 with an Atlas in it, 60 14 bolt setup on 42s, and some Trailworthy Fab beadlocks on it, and custom cage, custom dash, got everything custom on it. So
yeah, I knew one of your guys that used to work for you. He spent a lot of time on that dash, and it shows. He did a really good job on the dash. It has all the gauges are popping out. I mean, it's really cool. The center console and the front dash, both were just amazing looking. You guys might have seen it on at the Unlimited Off-Road Expo. I believe it's been there a couple years, maybe something like that. It's been there 1 or 2 years.
Yeah, it was also in Texas.
That's right. It was at the Texas Expo as well. And you'll see it in Disney a lot. He goes down to Disney and hangs out there. So you'll see it. It's big and orange. It's got a kicker system in it. That, geez, the sound system in it alone is crazy. But you'll also see him he goes to Crystal Beach every year too. So you'll see it out there at the Go Topless event. The next vehicle that came out, I believe, since I've known you, at least the next vehicle was the Defender. I think I met you whenever you basically first got the Defender. I went up to your shop, checked everything out, and I was curious how this thing was going to turn out, and it turned out awesome. Tell us about the Defender rig.
Well, the Defender, a gentleman out of Oklahoma here, Edmond Dairy, contracted to build him a truck, basically as a, I don't know what you want to call it, as a tribute to the soldiers is what it is. And long story short, he brought us I'm gonna say it's around a 38 model Chevy Dodge truck right in that era, because they all had that same cab on them. Bed was completely just gone off of it, but it was sitting on a deuce and a half frame, leaf sprung, had the military Rockwells, of course, under it, and the military tires, the 48-inch Michelins, big old heavy things, and just a gasoline carbureted engine. It was a rough truck, to say the least. And he was looking for something to showcase. He wanted to put it in some expos and things of that nature and kind of show off his company with it. So we took off of that, and it was around, that one was also about a 24-month build, 18 to 24 months on that one also. But yeah, it turned out really great. We ended up full of disc brakes and all four corners of Rockwells, of all things. 49-inch, he wanted the biggest DOT tires he could get, which was a 49-inch IROX. So on some 20-inch monster wheel, brand new bed in it, brand new all leather interior, key fob start. It ended up with a 6.2 LS motor in it from Show Me Speed there out of the Springfield area. Transmission came from the same place. I believe it was a 700R4, I believe, because we wanted the overdrive in it, built by the same guys. And just a standard 205 transfer case, because this vehicle really wasn't going to see no off-road, and we knew that, so there wasn't no sense of spending a bunch of money, you know, in certain areas and not in certain areas. But long story short, it turned out great. I wish we'd get more recognition in it or for it, I guess, because you just don't see it very often. We had it at a first show when we debuted it, and it took basically second place in overall show, and then it got most unique build.
Yeah, no, I remember that. That was in Guthrie.
Yeah, so I believe you rode in it either when they pulled it in or when they pulled it out.
I did. So, man, I've basically been telling a lie from the first thing. I've ridden in a couple GCO cars. But yeah, that thing's awesome. And I've seen it at a Thunder game, Oklahoma City Thunder. I've seen it there on Showcase one or two times. And there's spottings of it here and there. And so, but that's still, it's still around. And then I guess, what else has there been any more come out in the last couple years that you pulled out?
The Jeepster, Marvin Stammel's Jeepster.
Why did I even forget about that? Tell us about Marvin's rig and how it started and how it finished.
Marvin approached us at, actually it was between the Unlimited shows in the Louisville area. It was between, I think, the second and third show or something to that area or that effect. Anyway, he approached us about building his Jeepster. He said he'd had some other shops work on it for a couple of years, and it went to two or three different shops in that time frame. And it, you know, he just wasn't able to get a grasp on it or a handle on it, as he put it. And it just wasn't going fast enough for him, in a sense, as far as the build process of it. He got with us. We said we'd be interested in doing it. He kind of wanted a time frame. We let him know the time frame of when he could bring it to us, which was literally about 6 or 8 months before he could bring it to us. He brought it from Florida, from a shop in Florida, and when we got it, it was literally a basket case. Also, the body had been cut up already because they had other plans for it, I'm assuming. So they had the floor pans cut out, the side panels cut off. Axles were separate from it. The only thing that was together was basically a frame for it, and no mounts or anything like that on. Somebody had built a frame for this deal out of a TJ frame. Anyway, yeah, we got it as a basket case, and we took off on it. And getting with Marvin is sometimes tough to do, so there was some miscommunication between us throughout, you know, trying to get in touch with each other, and it caused the process to drag out a little bit just because communication between us and him.
Right.
But we got down to it, and I believe it debuted 2 years ago. So what is this, 19? So I think it came out in 17, if I remember right. He made it. We were pushing for Easter Jeep Safari out at Moab, and he showed up at Moab, I think, the last day of the Jeep Safari, and they had the next day was the 50th or 75th anniversary of the Jeepster. I think it might have been the 50th. So there was a big week of wheeling there with just a bunch of Jeepsters. In fact, I believe that's where Brian Shirley debuted his at. And I mean, he might not have debuted it there, but he had his there also.
Right. Well, very cool. Yeah. Now, tell us the details about the Jeepster. What's in it, and what was unique about it?
What was unique about it was it actually started out, and I don't know my years very well. I believe it was a 72, so the frame more looked like an older Bronco or an older International Scout. And we changed the front end to the flat grill looking Jeep of the Jeepster, which I think would be 60s, late 60s or something like that. To match up with the frame that was already built and the Hemi, he put a 5.7, I believe it's a 5.7 or 6.1 Hemi in it. I don't remember which one it is.
Right.
It does have a Hemi in it. And to make it all work right, because the motors are so much bigger than the four cylinders that came out in them, we actually had to extend the hood 5 inches. So we built the hood. Actually, we took two hoods, combined them, and made that hood on that thing 5 inches longer. And you really can't tell it until you pull it upside down the Jeepsters and notice how short their hoods are.
Yeah, no joke. You can't tell the difference unless you put one right next to each other to actually see it. It was a flawless addition that you guys did. I saw you guys do it. I'd been up to your shop a couple times throughout that build, and it was impressive to see how it worked, because it looks like a regular Jeepster until you pull right up next to it.
The only thing, and it's not really a regret, it's just something I wouldn't have done on that. That's something that Marvin wanted. He wanted that a roadster style look. So if you look around the windshield of that, there's no pinch welds. It's been shaved completely off to where you can't even put a top on it, basically. Kind of made it a roadster style look, as he was calling it. So yeah, as far as putting a top on it, he has to run those I can't think of the name of the companies that he's got them a top for it, but it doesn't seal off. It's not weather tight. You know, everything along the side rails, everything has been molded in, smoothed off, you know, just to give it that look that he was after. He did say the next one that he wanted to build would have a top on it.
Yeah, he did. I think he just recently bought he recently just bought an old Wagoneer.
He did. He said that's his wife's vehicle.
Yeah, his wife called him today or yesterday. I noticed on his Instagram that his wife called him today and said steering got hard and it was weird. So he went and saved her and ended up having a power steering belt break, and so he had to fix that. So, but I mean that's the joys of owning an older rig and you know, figuring out all the weak points in it. But the Jeepster's badass, man. I enjoy the Jeepster. It's cool to see it, and the cool thing is we get to see it all the shows that we go to, and it's definitely an eye catcher. It's not shiny. I mean, we compared it when we were at SEMA. What was it, a year or two ago? We were at SEMA and we saw the other Jeepster that what was it, Synergy put out.
Synergies, yeah.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. put it out, and it's a really pretty Jeep, but it's not functional, and it doesn't get used near as much as Marvin's does. So
I got to praise Marvin for that. He takes that, uses it, films it being used, the whole nine yards, washes it up, takes it to shows, you know, the Cars and Coffee deal that he goes to, I think, once a month.
Yep.
Just, he's constantly got it out there for us, and I can't thank him enough.
Yeah, no, Marvin's a crazy guy. He always goes out and showcases. He's so proud of that build. I think that's like kind of like his firstborn, even though he doesn't have a kid.
Right.
So, what are some of the other builds that you're happy about that you like showcasing? I mean, we got Juggy, we've got the Jeepster. Jeepster McJeep Face is basically, you can find him on Instagram. It's real easy. You've got the Orange Hammer, the Defender, and then some. What are some of the older builds? In fact, you know, what's really funny is there's a white YJ out there that I think it's Jory's as well now, right?
It is, correct. Uh-huh.
That's another really cool build. You'll see it out there. It's just a white buggy with I believe a 2-inch cage, correct?
It does have a 2-inch cage. It was originally built for a guy there in the Bonita area, and it was called Instigator. And then George has since ended up with it. In fact, it's at our shop now, and we're converting it over to a CJ. He likes them round headlights, so we've got the hood and the grill off. And, of course, this one was a pre-built buggy. And what Rocky is doing right now is actually adding 2.5 inches to the hood so we can put the CJ grill and a CJ hood on it for him.
Really?
Speaking of extending hoods.
Wow.
That's what he's doing at this moment, and we're trying to get it prepped and ready for BMR. If we can't get it in paint, at least we'll get it in primer for Jory. But we're changing the look of it a little bit. The Jeep's been around, golly, it's been around a long time, 7, 8, 9 years. When we brought it in, it was all out of square. Of course, it had bushings that was worn out in it, and it took us a day and a half just to square the thing up because all the link bars and everything from just people fooling with it. But it squared back up, and we figured out that we couldn't push the radiator back far enough because it'd get into the motor, and we, without having to move the motor and all that stuff, we just decided we'd add 2.5 inches to the hood. So we're cutting up a YJ hood and molding it with the original CJ hood and making it a CJ.
Wow, well that's crazy, man. And now I've talked to you a bunch about triangulation and all that, how you do the four links. Your four link's pretty unique, and there's a lot of rigs with them that just plain out work on the rocks, especially out at Disney, because that's probably, well, it's a great testing facility, and also it's probably the most prominent rock crawling area in the Midwest. What makes your four link better than everybody else's? I guess that'd be the best way to say it.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's so much better. Like I said, I don't know. There's probably better ones out there, to be quite honest with you. I don't know. There's a bunch of them I've seen, and some of them work, some of them don't work. Where I got mine from is, of course, I've known John Sumner since I was, you know, basically 10 years old in school with his kids here in the Claremore area. But me and John have sat and talked quite a bit about stuff. And the suspensions that they were building at the time, when they just started getting into the cool spring suspensions versus leaf springs, working with the geometry and figuring out the upper and lowers and the triangulation and things of that nature on them. And then I'd wound up going to some AFCO suspension usually puts on 3 or 4 different classes a year, and I've been to, I don't know, half a dozen of them. But it's about suspension, and it all goes back to drag racing and hot rocks, which is basically the same suspension by putting power to the ground versus, you know, trying to keep the wheel hop out and trying to get the, you know, just trying to get loss of power in the suspension moving. So the whole object there is to put all the power from the drive line going right down to the axle and right down to the tires, versus when you step on it, that the thing will raise up 3 or 4 inches or it'll squat down 3 or 4 inches, because every time it goes up or down, that's loss of power. So I basically took that information and sat down with John Sumner, of all people, and visited about their suspension, and basically just took a pencil and paper and went to drawing things out and measuring things. And the very first rig that we built, the shop built there after I came back from the suspension class and put that figure to the paper, was actually a little red.
Really?
And at the time it had an inline six in it, out of a Jeep Cherokee is what it was. It had a 909 or 999 transmission in it with a 231 transfer case in it sitting on a set of 60s. And we built it to that power and weight ratio that it had on it, and it would do anything down there at Disney that we asked it to do. And then once it got the V8 in it, things changed a little bit because we left the suspension the way it was, and the horsepower difference between the V8, of course, the 6.0 and the inline 6 is a lot different. It had just more wheel speed, so it'll just break the tires loose when you want it to. but it doesn't squat that much.
No, I took Little Red for the weekend. I mentioned this earlier. I took Little Red for the weekend and took my son out to Disney, and man, that thing it literally just works. There's no other way to describe it. I mean, I've taken my Jeep out to Disney, and that's what I compare it to. And man, going up Little Blue, going up Waterfall, I had no problems with it, and it works perfectly. So that's a good thing. So,
When it comes to suspension on things, there's a lot of things that come into play as far as the wheelbase, you know, the center of the axle to the center of the axle, the tire size, you know, the distance from the inside of the inside of the tread to the inside of the tread from the front to back axles, you know, that distance there. There's a lot that comes into play when you're designing the system. And when it comes to just these off the shelf, you know, call and order one and weld it up and bolt it in, they work. I'm not going to tell you they don't, because there's a gob of people that run those. They work, but you're only getting 60 to 70% of your movement out of them. And for that kind of money, I'd prefer to get closer to that 90 to 100% movement out of it, you know? So that's why we custom build everything. We don't have a kit that we just sell. We custom build every one to every Jeep that comes in. It's just a little bit different. The suspensions are the same, but the link bars might just be a little bit longer, might be a little bit shorter. Placement has to be a little bit different depending on what frame you're using, you know, the width of the axles, the off space of the rims. I mean, there's quite a bit that comes into play.
Yeah, no, it's something that there's a reason why people come to you to get it done, because I sure as hell couldn't do it myself. You know me, I don't even know how to work a welder, let alone a screwdriver.
So I've seen you work a microphone. You're pretty good at that.
Yeah, I can do the microphone. I can do video cameras and a computer, but you give me tools. And what's really funny is I went to 2 years of Votech for auto mechanics, and I did that back, gosh, 95 and 96, somewhere around in there. And I left the industry for a good 4 or 5 years, and I lost it all. I lost everything. I mean, I've got common knowledge, but that's it. I got nothing else. That's why I go to people like you, and then I guess Jiffy Lube to change my oil. now, what got you into the off-road industry? I mean, if I remember right, when we've talked, you were used to be in the lowrider style kind of stuff back in the 80s, didn't you?
I was, back when I was in high school, which wasn't quite the 80s. That actually kind of was. I graduated high school in 92, so that would have been 89, 90, 92, 91, 92. Yeah, I was into the lowriders pretty good. You know, looking at suspension back then, we were actually building, at the time, they were hydraulic. And toward the end there, about 91, 92, and 93, they were actually starting to use the airbags. You know, they were starting to gradually. They've been using them on the East and West Coast, but it just takes about 5 years to get to the Central States here. Mm-hmm. You know, than the teams do. So we were just getting into the airbags and stuff like that. Basically, when life took over for me, as far as getting married, having kids, you know, the standard day job and things of that nature. And so all that stuff just kind of went to the wayside there for a while. And And I just decided I probably ought to do something on my own. So that's what I done. And the rest is basically history, to say the least.
So yeah, John, you and John have been buddies for a long time. Looks like he's helped you out and you've helped him out. And his next event is coming up. It'll probably be, I don't know if this will release before or after Big Meat Run, but Big Meat Run in Disney, that's always a fun time.
It has attracted a crowd of people over the years.
Yeah. I mean, 15,000-20,000 rigs usually show up out there. So
it's crazy at times. And that actually has scared some people away from coming to it, you know, which I hate that, you know, I mean, I wished it wouldn't, but the crowds do sometimes deter people from coming out, but if you've never been to it, it's worthwhile to go just because of all the enthusiasts, and they all like the same sports you do, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and a lot of people, I know that they kind of get straight away because the cop situation, the GRDA being out there. But you and me both have had meetings with the GRDA, and this is something to, as long as you're not acting a fool or you have an open container in your vehicle, you're fine. They're not going to mess with you.
Okay, yep.
I don't know how many times I've had to tell people this is don't be stupid.
That's it. You know, basically the simplest way I've told people and the simplest way they told me was all the laws that apply on the highway apply down there in the bottom in when you're riding around in your Jeep or vehicle.
Right. Exactly. And honestly, to tell you the truth, I mean, I've been sitting there drinking a beer, just chilling out. And as long as I take that beer and throw it in the trash or the bag that I have that keeps all my trash, as long as I don't have that in my vehicle while I'm holding onto the steering wheel, you're fine. And just don't be stupid. So that's basically the only thing there. And it's an awesome event, man. I always have fun there. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it this year. As my Jeep needs a new motor, I'm still working on that. This is something that we can talk about. My Jeep, you took it and you put a 2-inch cage in it and kind of catered it to what I needed it for video work so I could get my boxes and stuff in and out of the backside. And then you put seats in it. I have yet to test out the cage yet, which... I'm kind of happy I haven't, but it's a good cage. But other than that, like I guess we'll just talk about next would be how does everybody get a hold of you at Green Country Off Road, and how can they find you on social media?
Well, right now, like I said, I actually ended up for years now. The parent company of Green Country Off Road was a company called Green Country Truck and Equipment Incorporated. That was what I originally started out of, and I just put the Green Country Off-Road underneath it, and as of, like I said, January 1, we completely separated from Green Country Truck and Equipment. It's its own company now, and I just got the paperwork literally last week for Green Country Off-Road, making it an official, its own business. I could not bring the 256 phone number with me from Bonita just because of the prefix down here to Claremore. They wouldn't allow it. So right now they're just running off my cell phone. And we've changed everything on the internet. We've put all of our addresses and phone numbers and stuff on the internet and to Claremore versus the Bonita. So right now people just get a hold of us through Facebook. It seems to be the main hub for people getting a hold of us is literally through Facebook. They'll message, and we still get, of course, we get customers, online customers that we will never probably meet. It'd be nice to meet them all, but, you know, from East Coast and West Coast buying product off our website. But yeah, other than that, it's just, it's really just word of mouth. But right now we're still about 6-8 months behind on work right now.
Well, man, I appreciate talking to you. I guess we're, basically, I'll see you. Actually, I'll probably see you in a couple days. I'm coming up to pick up my son up there, and that's kind of my halfway point. For those of you that don't know, halfway point is come hang out with them. So I may come up and hang out with you a little bit, and then hopefully I'll see you at BMR, or if not, maybe the Texas show coming up in April.
Yeah, we're looking at trying to go to that. Probably won't show in it, but at least go down there for a day or two at least. So
cool. Well, all right, man. Well, I appreciate it, Chad, and we'll talk to you later, buddy.
Hey, you bet. Thank you, Alan.
All right, bye. All right, back from that interview. Thank you, Mr. Chad McDonald from Green Country Off-Road out of Claremore, Oklahoma. He's a good friend of mine. As you heard in the podcast, he's done numerous things for me. And we've worked together on a lot of events. We've been to Unlimited Off-Road Expo a couple times together. He was part of one of the first Racers Lounge that we did. And he's a great guy. And he does some really cool fabrication. He spends his time on it. He's not one of those just to put them in and spit them out quick as possible. He takes his time on each vehicle that he brings in. It's a passion of his. So make sure you check him out. Go to Green Country Off-Road and talk to them. Sorry, guys. I had the phone on. I'm going to turn that off right now. But now, where are we going to be in the next couple months? Honestly, my main concentration right now is on the Unlimited Off-Road Expo in Fort Worth, Texas at Texas Motor Speedway. We're going to be in the infield there. And it's April 6th and 7th, and we are taking care of the Racers Lounge. Now, the Racers Lounge, we have four racers, which we're proud to say Donovan Blair. He did it last year. Donovan Blair, which is an Ultra 4 driver out of College Station, Texas. You have Jay Eakin out of Bixby, Oklahoma. He's racing a Jim's Garage buggy now. Been watching him for a long time. He started out just driving a TJ to the races and then just got so in-depth in Ultra 4, he just went out and bought a race car. And it's really neat to watch him. And he's actually got it all together. And he's going to do a little test and tune before we go. And then he'll be out there giving a couple rides here and there and doing demonstrations. We also have, as far as bouncers, we got BJ Allen and also his son Colby will be coming out and doing demos with us and burning up some tires on the WFO rig. And then also a guy from, I believe, Central Illinois is, I met him just, he just randomly called me earlier last year and knew that I did promotions and did stuff like that. And he kind of wanted to pick my brain. And his name is Matt Holt. He's owner of High Society Four Wheel Drive. High Society Off-Road, I believe is the name of it. But look up Matt Holt. You can't miss him. He's very active on the social media platform. But all four of those guys are going to be coming out. We're sponsored by Aturo Tire. Aturo Tire is supplying us with 16 different tires. And they want us to put on a show. And the guys have all agreed to it. And we're going to put on a show for you. If you were at the Louisville, Kentucky show, Unlimited Off-Road Expo, last June, it's going to be very, very similar to that. So lots of smoke, lots of donuts, lots of cyclones. We're going to have a great time there. You'll be able to get autographs, sit in the buggy, take pictures. And it's just going to be a really great time. So make sure you come out there, check us out at the Unlimited Off-Road Expo in Fort Worth. At the Texas Motor Speedway, we'll be in the infield. Now, this is one really unique thing that Unlimited Off-Road Expo offers. You can actually drive your buggy in and go through an obstacle course, separate of what we're doing, but an obstacle course, and you can drive your buggy on it. And your Jeep, your Toyota, your Chevy, your Ford, your Dodge, you can take it on if you're brave enough. You have to sign a release, of course. They're not going to be responsible for anything that you break, but It is a unique situation, and most everybody enjoys getting off that they never thought that they could do that in their rig. So make sure you go check it out April 6th and 7th. And you can go to Unlimited Off-Road Expo on Facebook or any of that and find the website, and you can buy tickets right now, in fact. So next on our list is the Unlimited Off-Road Expo in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's May 3rd and 4th. It will be at the Nashville Fairgrounds. I'm not completely positive on where it's actually going to be. It's already settled and where it's going to be. I just don't know personally. So check it out. I do need some racers. If you are a seasoned racer, you want to come out, we give you a decent amount of booth space, a place to showcase your rig, sign autographs, sign pictures, take pictures, talk to the people that want to get into it. That's what the Racers Lounge is designed to do, is where you get to be one-on-one with that racer and get to know what they go through to be able to race. It's not all wine and roses with Ultra 4 and bouncer racing. We aren't NASCAR guys. Most all the guys have day jobs that actually fund the racing, and this is their hobby. This is what they love to do. So that's what the Off-Road Racers Lounge is designed to do. So anyway, make sure if you are a seasoned racer and you want to do it and you want to showcase your area and showcase your product, which your product is you. It's you and your car and your race ability, and basically you're kissing babies and running for mayor. And if you want to be there for us and come and do that, get in touch with me at seeyouonthetrail@gmail.com. No spaces, just spell it out. seeyouonthetrail@gmail.com. And come and be a part of the Racers Lounge. We'd love to have you. Now the next one that I have coming up is June 15th, I believe it is. It's the Holley EFI Clash at the Crossbar. It's at Crossbar Ranch in Davis, Oklahoma. I'll be there as a spectator. I will not be there being a vendor or media, I do not believe. I may be media. I'm not completely sure. I'll basically just be there to see the race and see some of my West Coast and East Coast friends that I don't get to see very often because I live in the middle of the United States. And I only live about 40 minutes from there. So it's neat to see old friends that I've had at from KOH. And some of the, I meet a lot of new people there as well. It's drawn a lot of attention. Not to mention, it's right in the middle of the United States. It's not very, it's probably, an hour from OKC and 2.5 from Dallas-Fort Worth area. So it's a really cool place. It's a huge area. It used to be owned by the city of Davis, I believe, and then it got sublet, and now we have a promotional company that's really pushing hard to bring in Ultra 4. I heard rumor that they wanted nationals there at one point in time, which I would love to see. But anyway, I digress. Thanks for watching, guys. I want to make sure that you like and share all our podcasts. On all the platforms, all our platforms. Let me remind you what those are. We do a podcast on Anchor, Spotify, Google, Apple, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, YouTube, and Facebook. And go watch them and give it a thumbs up. Share it on social media. We love that. Check us out. If you have any constructive criticism that you want to talk to us about, please don't hesitate to message me or email me. We love that because we want to make it better for everybody. So help us grow, like it, share it, do everything for us. We do appreciate it. Stay tuned for next week. We are currently putting out our podcast every week, every Monday at 2 p.m. So make sure you subscribe to us and you'll get a notification. And on YouTube, I think you got to click that bell. And then on Facebook, you got to follow us or whatever it is, because it's different for every single social media platform, and it's getting pretty ridiculous on how they are, how they're monitoring that, how they're doing it. So we do appreciate you. Thank you very much. My name is Alan, and we will see you on the trail.